A glowing sphere orbits through darkness, followed by another, then several more. Light from the revolving spheres illuminates the word Curzon. Artificial eye. Inspired by true events. Through the interwoven strings of a tennis racket, the intense face of a blond man in his 20s, with long hair, wearing a sweatband. Tennis uses the language of life. Advantage, service, fault, break, love. Every match is a life in miniature. Andre Agassi.
There it is, the cathedral of tennis, Center Court Wimbledon. And the two top players in the world, Bjorn Borg and John McEnroe, are about to come out. It's the perfect rivalry, the baseline player and the net rusher.
Ice Borg versus Super Brett.
Bjorn Borg, four championships in a row, aiming for a fifth.
SF Studios presents a film by Jonas Metz. The Wimbledon Final 1980. Bjorn Borg is the number one ranked tennis player in the world. He's chasing his fifth consecutive Wimbledon title. In profile, the face of a determined-looking man in his early 20s, his mop of curly brown hair held back by a wide red sweatband. John McEnroe is the new rising star of tennis, ranked number two after Borg, chasing his first Wimbledon title. The rivalry between Bjorn and John changed the world of tennis and changed both men forever.
Final set, Borg serving.
An aerial shot of Borg on court serving from behind the baseline. Borg McEnroe. Crackling footage of a teenage boy playing tennis against a wall of garage doors. Moving quickly, he never misses the ball. A woman approaches him and says, "Let me have a go." When he hands her the racket and ball, she hits one shot, then gives up. "Nice," he says, laughing. The woman turns to face the camera and pleads, "Don't. Stop it." The teenage boy keeps playing. The man filming him shouts, "Is that Davis Cup you're playing, or Wimbledon? Bjorn? Are you in the final?" "Yes," replies the boy, not taking his eyes off the tennis ball. "Is the competition fierce?" asks the cameraman, but the boy is concentrating on hitting the ball. The young boy's face fades into a blur of light. Then Bjorn Borg, now in his 20s, is standing on a sunlit balcony overlooking city streets. Monaco, 1980, Bjorn Borg's home. Bjorn, who has long blonde hair, a moustache and a neat beard, leans over the balcony, looking down on an oval-shaped swimming pool beside the apartment block. Beyond the balcony is the wide blue sea, bordered by distant cliffs bathed in hazy sunshine. Holding onto the balcony rail with both hands, Bjorn leans forward, lifting both his feet off the floor. Slowly, he begins to do press-ups, lifting his body up off the ground while supporting himself with his hands on the balcony rail. His face is etched with concentration, and he clenches his jaw as he pushes his body up and down, sweat glistening on his bare shoulders and chest. Now on a clay tennis court, Bjorn runs back and forth behind the baseline, reaching the ball and returning it across the net with powerful ground strokes. Bjorn, wearing a blue and white t-shirt and dark blue shorts, continues to run from one side of the sun-baked court to the other, his feet sliding along the clay surface as he lunges for the ball and returns each shot relentlessly. On the other side of the net, his opponent is a tennis ball machine, surrounded by dozens of balls lying at the back of the court. Now, a few more are sent bouncing to join them. Bjorn pauses and leans over to take a breath, then resumes his practice. The lone player on a group of tennis courts, surrounded by leafy trees beside the blue water of the bay. Later, beside a parked car, he tries to open its door, then searches through his tennis bag. Crossing the road, he walks through an entrance gate, its overhead sign reading, "Tennis Club Monaco."
"Good luck at Wimbledon."
"Thank you."
Bien. Make sure you bring home the trophy now.
Do my best.
Bjorn runs down some steps into a locker room and rifles through a locker. Turning from the open locker, he sits down on a bench with his back to the compartments looking thoughtful. Then he reaches for a red baseball cap, puts it on his head, and smooths down his hair. Now he's walking down a narrow street, his head bent, the cap hiding part of his face, but passers-by still recognize him, and a small boy stops him for an autograph.
Yeah, sure.
One more, please, asks the boy.
You selling these?
Through a window and across the street, young women scream and wave at Bjorn. Hurrying off, he ducks into a cafe. The bartender asks, is someone after you?
Sorry, don't speak French.
A cup of coffee, please. Coffee? Bjorn leans on the counter while he's served. Here's your coffee, sir, says the bartender. A black man wearing spectacles. Thanks, says Bjorn, shaking sugar from a small packet into the cup, then taking a sip of the drink.
Do you speak English? A little. Can I come in with the money later? Because I left my wallet in the car.
No.
Bjorn looks from the coffee cup to the bartender, who shakes his head, smiling, then adds, you could give me a hand, though, if you like. Lifting up two cardboard boxes, Bjorn carries them through the cafe into the back room. Putting the boxes down on the floor, he spots a folded-up copy of the New York Post newspaper, its headline reading, Borg's Worst Nightmare. Turning the paper over, he sees a photograph of John McEnroe on the front page.
Okay. It's everything.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Amidou?
My name is Rune.
Rune?
Rune. Rune. It's
Rune.
Swedish.
Rune. What do you do?
I work as an electrician.
The bartender, Amadou, laughs. If you're an electrician, then I'm Prince Albert. Bjorn smiles, says thank you, raises his cup in salute and drinks his coffee.
You like electric?
Yes, it's a very good job. It's a normal job.
After dark, a young blonde woman's on the balcony smoking a cigarette, when Bjorn walks into the apartment. Where have you been, she asks. I was worried sick. I walked home. Is something wrong? No, I just lost track of time. As the young woman, Bjorn's fiancée, Mariana, looks up at him with concern in her eyes, he gently places one hand on her cheek and draws her to him for a kiss on the lips. As they draw apart, he asks, have you packed the bag? Of course, says Mariana with a small smile. He hugs her to him. A pair of eyes fixed on film of John McEnroe playing a match.
Al, fuck! Al! That is a break point! Get down and look at it! Shut the fuck up! If you want to give me a warning and you don't think that my dad is going to appeal it, that's on you, my man. That's not on me. And I don't really give a shit about it.
John and his father are watching the footage backstage at a television talk show.
To ask you to continue playing, Mr. McEnroe.
Fuck, has there been any mistakes officiating-wise today at all? Answer the question. The question, Jerkoff! Answer the question! Are we stopping
the play? The man the New York Times described as being the worst representative of American values since Al Capone. Ladies and gentlemen, John McEnroe.
John walks onto the set, pumping his fist at the applauding studio audience.
So, John, you upset anybody out in the wings yet?
No, not that I know of, not yet.
No, I like you, John. You're great. And in 3 days...
3 days.
You're going to London.
Yep.
To play Wimbledon. Yeah. And everyone's talking about Bjorn Borg's chance to win his fifth straight title and make tennis history. Now, apparently, The only thing standing between Borg and that record is you. Mm-hmm. Well, here's what it's saying over in London, where you're hardly making any friends. John, I got to ask you, what is it that you've done to the Brits?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just a different place, you know? It's a different culture, and they have warm beer, and it's just a different thing.
Well, have you got a plan to get them to stop booing?
I mean, I plan to go in there and play my game. And if I beat Borg in the finals, very hard to boo me if I'm number one, so.
As Bjorn and Mariana walk through an airport, a pack of press photographers and journalists surrounds them. At the exit, Bjorn's coach Lennart greets them. Everything all right? Bjorn climbs into a car while a crowd of teenage girls tries to touch him.
Well, this is what the press here is saying.
I can be anybody's nightmare, though, you know.
But I guess I wouldn't be exaggerating if I were to say that you and Borg are as different as two people could possibly be.
You keep going back to Borg. Is he backstage or something? Is he gonna, like, jump out of the cake? I feel like we keep talking about him. You know, I'm here. We're the interviews. Here we are.
It's just that Borg is often described as being pure perfection and zero emotion. Do you think he ever loses it?
I don't know.
Bjorn's in the car, looking out at a leafy residential area. Lennart, driving, says it's meant to rain tomorrow and Wednesday, but not today. This isn't our usual car, says Bjorn. The upholstery is different. God damn it, they know we want the same car, says Lennart. I'll call them tomorrow. Mariana squeezes Bjorn's hand. On the talk show...
You spent the whole fucking interview talking about Borg?
On the phone you said we're talking about the future of tennis. Now you're gonna bullshit me over here? That's so fucked up every fucking time, man. Fuck this sacred shit. They promised, Dad. This is pointless, man.
You did fine. That's
every fucking time.
2 days to go, Arthur. And everybody's talking about Bjorn Borg, the Swede who at only 24 could make history by winning his fifth Wimbledon. Can McEnroe pull Borg from his throne, Arthur?
Borg will be playing under a tremendous amount of pressure. Everyone expects him to win. McEnroe, on the other hand, he is the perfect underdog.
You played them both. Who's the toughest opponent?
McEnroe is the bigger talent, but playing Borg is like being hit by a sledgehammer. But if Borg is a sledgehammer, I'd say that McEnroe is a stiletto. A slash here, a slice there, and suddenly you're covered in blood, even though none of the wounds are particularly deep, and then... then you bleed to death.
6,000!
John's been playing pinball in a cafe while Bjorn's been hitting with partners on a practice court. Lennart tells him, don't worry, your confidence will return. Bjorn says, I thought it was closed court. Tell that to those leeches, says Lennart, gesturing to two men in suits standing nearby. Sitting with Lennart on a bench at the back of the court, Bjorn takes a drink and shakes his head. You'll be fine, just get into it, says Lennart. At a press conference, John, seated at the table next to Vitas Gerulaitis, facing a crowd of journalists and photographers. John pours himself a glass of water.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Borg will be here in a moment. Any questions for the other players?
Did he win already?
The journalists laugh at Vitas' joke. Then Bjorn joins the other players at the table. A journalist asks, how does it feel to get a telegram from the king wishing you luck? Bjorn replies, it's always nice when people wish you well.
Folk ask you lucky.
How does it feel knowing you'll make history if you win your fifth Wimbledon?
No special feelings.
John stares across at him. The conference becomes a blur of shouted questions and flash photography. Now, Bjorn's sitting in the back of a car between the two men in suits. As they pull up in front of a hotel building, Bjorn gets out and a crowd of excited teenage girls swarm around him. He signs autographs for them, then goes through revolving doors into the hotel, followed by Lennart and Mariana. In a hotel room.
This is for the fall of 82. It's 2 years away, so you don't need to think about it now, but just so you know, we're aiming mostly for Asia. Exhibition tournaments in Japan, South Korea, Hong Kong, maybe China. And then South Africa.
Well, I think we said no to South Africa.
It's $1 million for one match.
Yes, but it's also supporting apartheid.
Lennart says, we need to tune the rackets, Bjorn. Bjorn replies, you go ahead. I'll be right with you.
Come in.
A bellboy brings in gift boxes.
Soon you're going to need another room for all those wedding gifts. We've had an offer from the Daily Mail for the photo rights for your wedding. And what was the other offer, Andy?
The Post, 200.
Well, no, we decided on a private wedding.
Well, that's exactly why you should sell the rights. Otherwise, you're going to have 50 paparazzi hiding in the bushes.
Mariana asks Bjorn, what do you think? He's studying the contract.
Bjorn?
When she repeats her question, Bjorn asks, what's the problem? They're planning our life, says Mariana. I want to know where you stand. On South Africa and the wedding. Bjorn replies, I can't think about that. I can't think about that right now. Right, of course, says Mariana. She gets up and walks away, while the businessmen continue to talk to Bjorn. Later that night, Bjorn turns the dial on the air conditioning unit in the hotel bedroom. He's sitting on the end of the bed while she pulls on a pair of pajamas. Then, as they're lying next to each other in bed, she looks at him. Mariana says, if the wedding's stressing you out, we can postpone it. Bjorn moves closer to her. No, it's not a problem. We could make it simpler, suggests Mariana. Yeah, says Bjorn, unless everything's decided already. Isn't that up to us, she asks. Turning his head away, he gazes upwards. In a hotel room, John's pulled open the curtains and is standing at the window, looking out at the London cityscape under a grey, cloudy sky. Turning from the window, he opens a drawer, takes out a notepad, then makes a telephone call.
Hi there. Hey, can I make a request? Do you have any black felt tip markers? Like a Sharpie and a big 80 by 80 piece of paper, like a board, like a poster? Can you set up the markers then?
He's scrawling on a board.
Okay, thank you.
Hanging up, John gazes at his handiwork. He's written a list of names with Borg at the top encircled. Later, he's on the phone again.
Hey. Hi, Mom. Is Dad there?
No, he's in proceedings with the client.
Do you know when he's going to be back?
After.
Whenever that is. Well, then can you call me after the client thing?
Why do you need to talk?
Because it's important.
Okay.
Why else?
Don't be angry.
I'm not.
You are sounding...
No, I just don't want to. I don't want to have this with you. I don't want to have this with you. You know, there's a lot going on.
Hanging up, John sits on the end of his unmade hotel bed wearing jeans and a Ramones t-shirt. After dark, a lighted window on the top story of a building, then bare feet are pressed down lightly on the strings of tennis rackets laid out on a carpet. The feet belong to Bjorn and Lennart, who are testing the strings on a dozen or so rackets. Now, Bjorn's sitting on a chair holding a racket in each hand. He taps them together gently, listening to the sound they make, then hands them to his coach. Lennart tells him, go to bed, I'll take care of the rest. Bjorn gets up from the chair, but instead of going to bed, begins pacing back and forth. What's the matter? Lennart asks.
Lennart.
Shaking his head, Bjorn says, nobody will remember that I won Wimbledon four times in a row, just that I lost the fifth time. Who cares what they think? Asks Lennart. It's like everybody's just waiting for me to tumble, says Bjorn. Screw them, says Lennart. Give everything you've got tomorrow, even if it feels like the last thing you do. Grasping the back of Bjorn's head, he presses his forehead against Bjorn's and taps him gently on the side of the head. It's all in here, Bjorn. In here. The teenage Bjorn on court. In the indoor court, he returns the shots of his opponent, Olsen, while the umpire looks on from a high chair, courtside. It was out, screams the younger Bjorn. Wake the hell up. What did you say, young man? Asks the umpire. Jorn flings his racket down. Unsportsmanlike conduct, Borg. Penalty, love 15. Lennart's walked in and joined the spectators. Is that, asks Lennart. Borg, he's from Södertälje. Lots of energy. Yes, but not quite right in the head. His club doesn't know what to do. The kid's an embarrassment. Look at that backhand. Two hands. What does he think he's swinging? A bat? Lennart's attention's fixed on young Bjorn's playing style. Arriving home, the teenage Bjorn storms into his room and slams the door. From the kitchen, his mother calls, "Listen, you'll win next time." Bjorn sits on his bed looking fed up. Another day, he and his mother are in the tennis club office facing the manager. There must be some other way, asks Mrs. Borg. Bjorn won't cause any more trouble. I promise, adds Bjorn. It's important to make a statement, says the manager. 6 months suspension is harsh, though, argues Bjorn's mother. We're getting calls from Halmstad, Harkoping and Stockholm, from the parents. They're upset and don't want their boys mixing with Bjorn. Mrs. Borg gazes at the manager wide-eyed, then glances at her son. Tennis isn't like soccer or hockey where it's all about winning, continues the manager. In tennis, the way you win is just as important. It's a gentleman's sport. Stubbing out his cigarette, the manager adds, let's be honest, tennis is not a sport suited to all levels of society. Mrs. Borg appears lost for words. Later that evening, she and her husband are seated at the dinner table with Bjorn. Mr. Borg's flicking through a newspaper while his wife sips a hot drink. Bjorn's father leans across the table towards his son. Mr. Borg, who wears spectacles, looks at Bjorn and asks him, what goes on in that head of yours when you play? Getting no response, he adds, look at me when I'm talking to you. Bjorn raises his eyes and mutters, I don't know. We'll have to sell that racket, says Mr. Borg. Runa, please, says his wife. None of the other kids make a scene. Shut up, says Mrs. Borg, to her husband's astonishment. In his room, a young Bjorn lies on his bed, staring up at the ceiling, looking defeated. Now he's on an outdoor ice rink, skating around the perimeter under neon floodlights against the night sky. Bjorn, wearing a woolly hat and scarf, skates on, staring straight ahead of him. At the rink side, a man calls, hey kid, I'm turning off the lights. But Bjorn whizzes past him without responding. Out of the shadows steps Lennart. Stopping by the rink side, he watches the young athlete skating around the ice. Later, they're in a cafe. Lennart asks Bjorn, don't you want a cinnamon roll? I don't have enough money, says Bjorn. It's on me, you deserve it, says Lennart. Two cinnamon rolls. At a table, Bjorn sips a hot drink. Seated opposite him, Lennart says, so you play hockey too? That explains your backhand. It's like a slap shot. Yes, says Bjorn. Makes it harder. That's right, says Lennart. They say you're almost as good at hockey as you are at tennis. Maybe it's a better fit for me, says Bjorn. Says who? Asks Lennart. As Bjorn hesitates, his eyes cast down, Lennart asks him, you know I'm the captain of the Davis Cup team. It's part of my job to keep track of the talent. Not many get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct, remarks Lennart. He observes the young boy closely. They say you're not quite right in the head. Have they told you that as well? Bjorn lowers his gaze and nods. Do you think it's true? Asks Lennart. Bjorn looks at Lennart. It's not. Lennart tells him, they think they know what it takes. Do you think any of them have ever played at Wimbledon Centre Court? I have. Three quarter-finals. In 46, 48 and 51. Bjorn nods. I know. Later, Lennart's driving his car with Bjorn in the passenger seat. Percy Rosberg and I want you in Stockholm for training, he tells Bjorn. Does that sound good to you? Yes, says Bjorn. Another thing, Bjorn, says Leonard as they drive along. And don't repeat what you've been told to say. What do you want from tennis?
A little bit of tennis.
Bjorn turns to look at him. To be the best.
The best.
Best in Sweden, asks Leonard. No, says Bjorn. In the world. Leonard smiles. They drive on along a long, empty road bordered by high walls, with a bend in the far distance. In 1980, Bjorn's standing outdoors in early morning light looking at his surroundings. From indoors, Mariana watches him through a window, then goes outside to join him. She approaches him from behind and stands by his side. He turns to look at her, then lowers his head, apparently lost in his thoughts. Bjorn asks her, "Can you picture me doing anything else besides tennis?" Looking up at him, Mariana replies, "Yes." She studies his inscrutable face. "Can you?" Bjorn looks down, then turns to her, as if about to answer, but says nothing. Now, he and Leonard are walking side by side down a long corridor inside the All England Clubhouse, Wimbledon. "Don't think," advises Leonard, looking at Bjorn, who's wearing a white and blue striped headband. "Keep it simple. He has a strong serve, that's all. Stick to the baseline. Play your tennis." Close-up of Bjorn in profile. First round, Borg versus El Shafei. On a grass court, Bjorn serves to his opponent, returns a shot with his double-handed backhand, but then sends a forehand into the net. Now, El Shafei serving. They rally, then El Shafei hits a winner. John McEnroe's watching the match on TV in his hotel room.
Bjorn Borg, world number one, is having an unexpectedly hard time against the unseeded Egyptian El Shafei.
"No thank you. I said no thank you. I said twice.
Oh, Pete. Oh, my God.
Motherfucker.
You good?
Yeah. Look, there it is."
He shows Peter Fleming his war list.
"Basically, you and all your matches, we cheated each other in quarters, and I got Connors and Semi Borg in the final."
"How long does it take you?"
About an hour or so. "You got your wallet?"
"Yeah."
"I gotta get out of here, man. How's your foot?"
"Yeah, it's better."
"Yeah?"
"Yeah, I got this ankle support, and it's working."
"Cool. See how it goes? Cut here?"
"Yeah." "Okay. And then we meet here."
"Yeah, so you gotta go this way."
"Okay."
"And that's us here. You stop there, and the rest of the shit goes."
"Are you not sure you're going to beat me?"
"Well, fuck yeah."
"Yeah?"
Later.
"Any comments on your performance today, Mr. Borg?"
"Well, he played very, very good. And I beat him in the end, but it was not easy. But I'm looking forward to the next game."
"So tougher than you thought out there?"
"It took time to feel the surface, but... then after a while, I played my tennis."
"How many times I tried to do this, tried to go into a match and just been like, no emotion, no order, just be Borg. This is impossible. This isn't human." He's like,
"Yo,
hey,
where you guys been? I've been looking for you."
"Just here.
How you doing?
Yeah.
How you doing?
Good. All right.
Peter.
Good to see you.
I got a car waiting for us. Let's go."
"No, I gotta see Jenny."
"Peter.
Sorry.
All right, here we go."
Peter Skerolitis and John down their drinks and leave the bar to head off to a disco with a group of girls in tow.
"It's like my second home. I love this place. Honestly, everybody's so good here. Good people, you know. Hey, man.
How you doing, man?
Good to see
you. Hey.
Peter opens a bottle of champagne.
Yes, that was fucking brilliant.
Don't hit me in the fucking head. Hey, are you watching the matches? You watching board matches?
Yeah.
So you're seeing what I'm seeing? You're seeing him get slower?
Junior.
Like much, much slower? Because he's out of shape?
You'll understand someday, all right?
Explain it.
Look, he got 4 Wimbledon titles, all right? It's a lot of pressure.
What?
You know, everybody wants to beat Bjorn. Everybody wants something from Bjorn. It makes you the loneliest fucking guy on the planet.
That's tight,
you know?
Son.
Ooh. That's good shit. Look, this is Eve, and this is Eve, and they're Brits. They're beautiful fucking ladies. They want to meet you. They want to party with you. They fucking love you. I can't talk about tennis here. I mean, look at these titties, right? What the fuck? What more do you want, John? But look, you want to know what Bjorn's doing right now?
Yes.
He's in bed. His room is cold as fuck because he wants his pulse below 50 beats a minute.
That's a rumor.
It's not. He's got all these superstitions, rituals.
Like, cut the shit and just say the stuff I want to fucking
do. This year, his parents aren't allowed to come, right? He only lets them come every second year. And when they do, they got to wear the same clothes throughout the tournament.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, right? Every year, he trains on the same court. He rents the same hotel. He rents the same car. He sleeps in the same room. His coach always brings 50 rackets strung tight as fuck. And every night before the match, they meet in Leonard's room going over all the rackets, organizing everything according to tension and key. It's like a fucking religion. Mariana, his girlfriend, she takes care of his bag. Same meticulous order, everything exact. What is that? When he gets to the arena, takes the same chair and two towels. Not one, not three, two. And he never treads on the baseline.
Why?
Because that means bad luck. They say he's an iceberg, but really he's a volcano, keeping it all in until boom.
A young John McEnroe in his room puts a headband around his head and looks at his reflection in a long mirror. On his wall, among other posters, is a black and white signed photo of Bjorn Borg. John adjusts the headband over his curly hair, then mimes hitting tennis strokes, watching his action in the mirror. On a clay court, John bounces and shuffles on the spot, warming up before a practice session. John runs back and forth on court, practices his service, then he's indoors with his mother, who's about to cut his hair.
A bit shorter, huh?
She snips John's curls with scissors.
That geography test. What happened there?
I got a 96 out of 100.
What about the other four?
I got the top of my class.
How many kids in your class, John?
30.
The real world outside of school is a lot bigger than 30 people, right? Tennis making you lose focus?
Wimbledon, 1980, second round, McEnroe versus Rochevert. John turns to the umpire.
Well, come on. Is somebody gonna do something about the pigeons? I mean, you don't hear that? On the roof, you don't hear that? On the roof.
Nothing will be done about any pigeons during this match, Mr.
Fucking
McEnroe.
Back! Pigeons are ruining my focus, don't you get it?
I have to ask you to continue
shut
playing,
up,
Mr.
Shut
McEnroe.
Up.
John bounces the ball, then serves. In their hotel room, Bjorn and Mariana are watching the match on television. Bjorn's attention's focused on the screen as John turns on the umpire again.
Why don't you light off fireworks while I'm doing this thing? Why don't you do that? Light off fireworks while I'm serving, yeah? Whistle a fucking song or something.
Quiet, please.
Thank you. Come on, shut the fuck up!
He's not concentrated, says Mariana. Bjorn says no, it's the other way around. Just look. On screen, John serves an ace. A small smile plays on Bjorn's lips as he recalls his years as a teenage player. To hell with this, shouts the teenage Bjorn, waving his racket. Cool it, Bjorn, says Leonard, his umpiring. 15 love to Bengston. When Lennart calls his shot out, Bjorn swipes the air with his racket in frustration. Another practice session on an indoor court. Lennart watches as Bjorn rallies with another player, then swishes the air, looking annoyed with himself. As the session goes on, Bjorn returns his opponent's shot with a forehand, but the ball goes sailing way beyond the baseline. Lennart shouts, "Let's call it a day. Thank you." Leonard walks over to Bjorn. What are you doing swinging like that after you miss? Bjorn tries to walk off, but Leonard blocks his way. Focus on the next shot instead.
What do I say?
Are you listening to me? Shouts Leonard as Bjorn leaves with his tennis bag.
Leonard,
could you swing by my office later? Asks a bearded man courtside. We need to talk about Borg. Will he compete against New Zealand? Hell no, says Leonard. He's only 15. Isn't he good enough? He's different. We shouldn't pressure him. This has tremendous publicity potential. If a 15-year-old Swede played Onni Parin, the whole world would take notice. It wouldn't matter if he lost. The youngest Davis Cup player ever. Leonard says, he's a child. I won't set a 15-year-old up against a player ranked 20 in the world. Then I'll find someone who will, says the bearded man. Leonard stares at him in disbelief. Wimbledon, 1980. Leonard watches Bjorn putting tape around his fingers, ready for his next match. Leonard smiles, then picks up a tennis bag. As Bjorn taps two rackets together, listening to the sound they make, John McEnroe walks into the room in his tennis whites.
My father's going to peel it anyway.
Hey, but congrats on staying away from the whole match today, boss.
Lighten up, Junior. You won. Come on, give us a smile.
Shut the fuck up.
Fuck you.
John sits down on a bench, rubs his eyes briefly, then begins to unlace his footwear. As he pulls off one shoe, he looks up and notices Bjorn sitting across the room from him. Bjorn offers him a small smile, but John turns his face away and raises his arm to adjust his headband. Third round, Borg versus Frawley. Borg hits a winning smash, then walks back to the baseline.
Love 40.
As the match goes on, the heavens open and rain pours down. Spectators start putting up umbrellas, and a team of ground staff pulls covers across the grass court. Bjorn strides back to the locker room with Leonard following. I can't do this, says Bjorn. Can't we make them call it off? A sold-out centre court, asks Leonard. Bjorn. Leonard looks at his player, a frown of concern on his face. Bjorn paces the locker room. Go and talk to them. Talk to them. When he raises his voice, Leonard turns and walks out of the room, closing the door behind him. In the empty room, Bjorn sits down heavily on a bench and leans forward, staring at the floor for a moment. Then he looks up, his face intense. He's about to get to his feet again when the door opens. As he turns his head to see who's there, Leonard walks back in. It's stopped raining, says Leonard. They won't call it off. He holds the racket out to Bjorn. Use this one. The air's humid. Bjorn looks his coach in the face. Did you talk to them? Leonard sighs. You know I didn't. Bjorn shrugs and puts the racket down. Bjorn urges Leonard. It wouldn't make a difference. As Bjorn nods, Leonard leans towards him. Just get into it. In a flashback, the teenage Bjorn's practicing with an opponent on an indoor court while Leonard umpires courtside. When Leonard calls his shot out, Bjorn argues, it was on the line. Continue, orders Leonard. You want him to win, shouts back Bjorn. After play resumes, another of Bjorn's shots lands close to the line and Leonard again calls it out. What the hell, shouts Bjorn. Continue, says Leonard. Bjorn's return lands well inside the court, but Leonard again calls out. Game Benson. Damn it, shouts Bjorn, throwing down his racket. Pick it up, orders Leonard. Go to hell, you old bastard, shouts Bjorn and runs off. But Leonard catches him, drags him back, and throws him down on the court. I told you to pick it up, he roars. Pulling a door open, Bjorn runs outside into the woodlands. Stopping before a tree, he pummels his trunk, sending chips of bark flying with each successive blow. He's lying on his back on the ground, staring up at the sky. Hazy sunshine filters through the tall trees around him. In 1980, Leonard's driving the car with Bjorn beside him and Mariana in the back seat. You're getting there, says Leonard. Bjorn clutches the headband between his fingers and asks, "How hard can it be to string the rackets, right?" "There's nothing wrong with the strings," answers Leonard. "I can tell when it's right," says Bjorn. "That's not the problem, and you know it," says Leonard. "All those exhibition games and that sponsorship crap." "Shut up," says Bjorn. "Pardon," says Leonard. "Shut up and do the stringing right. That's all you need to do. If I'm that lousy, fire me. Okay."
"Okay."
Leonard pulls the car up. "Are you serious?" "Dead serious," says Bjorn. Mariana tries to intervene, but the two men stare at each other, ignoring her. "What are you going to do now?" asks Leonard. "What are you going to do?" asks Bjorn. "Drone on about your lousy three-quarter finals." Leonard gets out of the car and slams the door behind him. In his hotel room, Bjorn's watching John's match on TV.
"So, Arthur, what must Bjorn Borg be thinking after this sensational demonstration?"
"Well, if McEnroe can maintain this form, we may very well have a new champion."
Turning the TV off abruptly, Bjorn sits on the end of the bed, pressing his hands to his face. Mariana comes over to him. "You'll beat him," she says. "How do you know that?" he asks. "I just do," she says. "Nobody can know that. I might blow it in the next game." "Everybody acts like this is easy," he goes on. "Just go out there and do it. You're a star. You'll take him down." "It's not easy for any of us," begins Mariana. "So when's your next big game?" snaps Bjorn. Mariana lowers her gaze. "If it's so hard on you, then leave," he tells her. "Go on. Leave me too." He stares at her wild-eyed, then walks away. Outside, Bjorn's running alone in the night, while indoors, Mariana smokes a cigarette. In flashback, the footage of the young Bjorn playing tennis against the wall. Flashbacks of the younger Bjorn playing outdoors, interspersed with memories of Leonard's smiling face advising him, "Don't think, take your time." As Bjorn pounds along the tarmac, a tram trundles on tracks beside him. His face is grim, his jaw set with determination. In flashback, the teenage Bjorn sitting on his bed, his mouth set in a tight line, his hands clasped. He looks up at the sound of a knock on the door, but makes no move to answer it. Leonard opens the door and looks in. As Bjorn turns his face away, Leonard walks into the room, closes the door behind him and stands looking at Bjorn, who's lowered his eyes, refusing to meet his coach's gaze. "I know what it's like, you know," says Leonard. As Bjorn sits, avoiding his gaze, he adds, "Sometimes I lost on purpose, just to get away from that awful feeling when the game slips away. When I lost, I'd go straight to the locker rooms and puke," continues Leonard. "I couldn't bear losing." "That goes for you too," he says, looking at Bjorn, who's still tight-lipped. "It's a matter of life and death to you. The others don't feel the same, they're not like you. That's why they'll never be as good as you can be." At these words, Bjorn looks up for the first time. Then Leonard turns and moves away from him. "But wanting it that bad can also trip you up," warns Leonard. "Three quarter finals at Wimbledon, no other Swede has done that. In 1948, I could have won the whole damn thing," claims Leonard. He shakes his head. "Then I lost the first set and the second. I couldn't get past my own head." Bjorn glances up at his coach, who appears caught up in his memories. "I should have shut down. Only I didn't." Leonard walks across the room, picks up a chair, sets it down opposite Bjorn and sits down in it. "This Saturday, I'm letting you play Oniparan," he tells him, "on one condition." "I'm not going to apologize," says Bjorn, looking straight at Leonard. A smile slowly spreads across Leonard's face. "You don't have to," he says, "but promise me something." In a locker room, two players in yellow and blue jackets, Sweden's colours. Lennart walks in wearing a blazer and tie. Where's Bjorn, he asks. One player points a finger. Back in Bjorn's bedroom, Lennart, sitting facing him, says, "Promise to never show a single bloody emotion ever again. Be like a pressure cooker and block everything else out. It just doesn't exist." In the bathroom, Bjorn vomits into the toilet, then quickly rinses his face and washes his hands. Wimbledon, 1980. In the locker room, he recalls his coach's advice again. All that rage, fear, and panic, loaded into every stroke, into every single forehand, every backhand, every single shot. From Bjorn playing on the Wimbledon grass course to the teenager facing his coach in his room. Do you understand? Referring to his Davis Cup match against Onni Parin, Lennart tells the teenage Bjorn, "Saturday's match won't be five sets, it'll be one single point. One point at a time, Bjorn. But if you lose your head and start acting out," adds Lennart, "that's the end of the line." From 15-year-old Bjorn in the bathroom wearing his Davis Cup yellow and blue jacket to sitting facing Lennart in his room, Lennart extends his hand and after hesitating, Bjorn shakes it. Bjorn rests his forehead against the bathroom mirror and comes out to find Lennart, who clasps his shoulder, then taps his head and tells him, "It's in here." A TV interview with 15-year-old Bjorn. "After beating Parin, you're taking the world by storm. You're quite the heartbreaker. English girls are running after you. Has that been a problem?" Bjorn smiles shyly, maybe a little.
"Little time.
The world of tennis has never before seen anything like this."
Girls scream and wave placards reading, "I love you, Borg." The interviewer asks Bjorn, "What will happen if you stop winning?" "I won't." "When you get tired of all the hysteria?" "No." "Repeating this battle of will and nerves?" "No." "You want this? This is your life?" "Yes, this is my life." 1974, Bjorn wins his first French Open, youngest player ever. 1976, Bjorn wins his first Wimbledon, youngest player ever. 1978, Vitas and Bjorn are at Studio 54, New York. In the disco nightclub, Bjorn's moving through the crowd of dancers, looking around him, fascinated by the clubgoers, many of whom are wearing revealing outfits. Feathers float down from the ceiling. Bjorn, who's standing motionless, rock-like in the sea of dancers, catches a feather in his hand while around him, the nightclubbers gyrate and drink champagne. From the disco rhythms of Studio 54 to the peace of Bjorn's hotel bedroom, he's lying in bed alone on his back, his head on a plump pillow. Then he's sitting up, bare-chested, on the edge of his bed. Lennart's walking down the dimly lit hotel corridor carrying an ice bucket when he finds Mariana sitting on the floor outside the door of her and Bjorn's room. She's writing something in a book. Approaching her, he asks, "Did he throw you out?" She replies, "No, he's asleep."
"Nej, han sover."
As he moves nearer to her, Lennart asks Mariana, "What are you writing, poetry?" "No, a book," she replies. "My wedding gift to Bjorn."
Du
loves present
to Bjorn.
Mariana's blinking back tears. Lennart says, "I was about to have a drink. You need one too." Now, Mariana's seated on a sofa having a drink. She looks over at Lennart, who's sitting near her, and remarks, "This must be the first time I've seen you in a hotel room without any rackets." As she places a cigarette in her mouth and reaches for her lighter, she asks him, "Remember my first date with Bjorn?" "He'd seen you play in the French Open," recalls Lennart. Mariana smiles at the memory. "He called me from his hotel room. I thought he was reading aloud from a script or something." Lennart observes her as she continues. "He asked me out and I expected it to be just the two of us, but then you were there too," she laughs. Leonard smiles as he calls the evening to mind. He was so nervous. That was fun.
Oh, okay.
Mariana's smile has faded. She asks Leonard, when did we stop having fun? Leonard replies, they've been wearing him out for years. There are no in-betweens for Bjorn. Second or third place might as well be 12th or 1,012th. It's the same to him. When he starts losing, it's over. In his room, Bjorn's sitting up, breathing hard, his hands resting on his knees. Mariana tells Leonard, it's like you gave up on him back there in the car. Leonard replies, he fired me. She asks him, don't you want to be around when he tumbles? Leonard looks away, his expression uneasy. Now Bjorn's lying on his back, his arms folded across his chest, his face peaceful, apparently asleep. In contrast, John McEnroe walks into his hotel bedroom, sinks down onto the bed, then promptly gets up when he realises he's sat on a piece of paper. John picks up the note and unfolds it to read the message, coming over for the semi, Dad. In flashback at home, young John's bringing in drinks for his parents' friends.
Tom, multiply two numbers.
Any two numbers?
Yes.
32 times 14.
448.
Now, you gotta make them sweat.
122 times 46.
5,612.
Okay. 66,322 times 2,198.
John swallows. As his father looks at him, his smile vanishing, John looks crushed. In 1980, John's with Vitas in the hotel lounge.
You can dance to Debbie Harry.
Well, you're like 57 years old.
Honestly.
What the fuck are you doing? My generation.
Hey, Pete, how you doing?
Yeah, pretty excited. So, it's you and me. John? You ready?
See you, Tom.
See you, John.
Good.
Seriously?
John strides out of the lounge. Later, he's in the locker room pulling on a white shirt with red and blue stripes across the back when Peter Fleming comes out of the bathroom to join him.
You still not talking to me?
John pulls on a headband, then his jacket, all the while chewing gum and pointedly ignoring Peter.
Where's my ankle support?
John shoots a brief, swift glance at Peter, who searches through his tennis bag, then sits down on a bench.
Come on, John, give me the ankle support.
John's gathering his rackets.
John.
Peter stares at his friend, open-mouthed.
If you gentlemen would like to come this way.
John strides out of the locker room. Picking up his bag, Peter follows him through the corridor to the court. Quarterfinal, McEnroe versus Fleming. John bounces the ball, then serves left-handed to Peter. Peter returns and John, who's moved to the net, volleys back. When Peter replies with a forehand, John hits his return just inside the line for the winner.
40-15. John McEnroe is slaughtering fellow countryman Peter Fleming.
Bjorn watches the match on television, his gaze fixed intently on the screen. On court, Peter trudges to the baseline, looking hot, sweaty and fed up, while across the net, John runs and leaps for each ball, vibrant with energy. After the match, John's in the locker room shower, looking somewhat subdued. As the water runs down from his head over his shoulders, he glances across at Peter, who's packing up his kit.
I didn't take your ankle thing, you know?
I really didn't. Pete, that's not something I would do. Why? Fuck you, John.
Fuck me.
Peter finds the ankle support.
Look, I fucking told you, man. I fucking told you, didn't I? Fuck the ankle support, okay?
Are you done?
Sit down.
Hey. Are we good?
Peter looks John straight in the eyes.
I'm gonna say this once. You're gonna win Wimbledon.
If not this year, then it's only a matter of time. You're gonna be number one. I know it.
Okay.
But you'll never be remembered as one of the greats. You know why? John, look at me. Because nobody likes you. Not one kid out there wants to be like Johnny Mac when he grows up.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. You know, in 20 years, the only thing people are going to say is, hey, why wasn't even that crazy guy that always yelled at the umpire? You fucked up my game. I'm your friend.
Peter gets up, picks up his kit, heads for the door, and slams out of the locker room, leaving John sitting alone. In flashback, John's sitting on one of a row of empty chairs, 1979, Manhattan, New York.
John McEnroe?
In an office.
Hi, John. How are you?
You think maybe we could ask the receptionist not to yell out my name like that every time I come in here?
Weren't you the only one out there?
Yeah, I'm the only one out there. And it makes me feel uncomfortable she yells my name out like that. You know, I walk in here edgy.
Okay. Well, we don't want you edgy.
Okay.
We want you to feel comfortable.
Thank you.
No problem. John, you mentioned defensive.
In his Wimbledon hotel room, John's sitting on the bed while his father sits opposite him on a sofa making notes on a paper. Between them is a chessboard.
What's your mood, man?
John's father looks up from his notes, reaches over to the chessboard, and makes his move, taking one of John's pieces out of the game. John promptly makes his next move, then sits up, pressing both his arms into his back. His father glances up from the paper.
How's the back?
It's the same. He's already seen a lefty before he got here. I mean, it's not even a surprise, you know.
But he hasn't seen you.
John turns his attention from the list on his wall and looks at his father questioningly.
We win.
John glances down at the chessboard. Now he and his father are in a lift. When the doors open, they're greeted by a young woman in a smart black outfit carrying a clipboard.
This way, please.
The young woman leads them across the lobby. Then in a meeting room, John studies three posters on a table. Each one shows him endorsing a brand of racket.
Can we touch it?
Yeah.
We push a button now, we can get billboards out before the final.
Isn't this a bit simplistic? Shouldn't we see another side of John? What we are seeing right now is unique. Tennis players are like rock stars. The tabloids are having a field day with him. But this rivalry between Borg and John is forcing people to ask themselves, who am I? The gentleman or the rebel?
From John looking at the ads with his image and the slogans Rebel with a Cause and McEnroe Swears By It to Bjorn in his tennis whites, semi-finals.
It's a beautiful morning here at Wimbledon for the men's semi-finals. Bjorn Borg is up against the American, Brian Gottfried. And in the second semi-final, a clash between two of the most controversial figures of tennis today, John McEnroe and fellow countryman Jimmy Connors.
On court, both John and Bjorn prepare to serve to their respective opponents.
First serve, Wimbledon semi-final.
Bjorn's serve hits the net.
Love 15.
Returning to the baseline, Bjorn bounces the ball, serves, and again finds the net. Bjorn looks up at Mariana in the players' box. Leonard's watching the match on TV.
Game, second set to Gottfried. One set.
Bjorn Borg is having a tough time against Gottfried. Unexpectedly tough.
Connors finds the net.
Listen to those jeers. I can't remember a single Wimbledon match where the crowd has made this much noise.
Bjorn sends a forehand past the baseline.
Now!
John returns.
Help!
Excuse me?
It wasn't on this side of the line, Mr. McEnroe.
Hal, the chalk flew up.
The ball has been ruled out.
Excuse me?
It was a good call. It was a bit of a scramble.
You can't be serious. You cannot be serious.
It was a
the ball was on the line. Chalk flew up all over, man. The chalk flew up. He saw it. That's why he's walking all over it. Everyone saw it was in. You cannot possibly call that out.
I'm going to issue you a warning for unsportsmanlike behavior, Mr. McEnroe.
Bjorn's forehand wins the point.
Bjorn isn't playing any great tennis, but it's enough to beat the unseeded American Gottfried.
Bjorn, congratulations on reaching the final. So it's either Jimmy Connors or John McEnroe that awaits you now. How do you respond to McEnroe's comment from before the tournament that Borg the machine will soon break down?
I'm just like anybody else. I'm not a machine.
You guys are the pits of the world.
You keep your mouth shut out.
Keep
your mouth shut.
Why don't you stay on your side? No one's going to talk to you.
I'm talking.
You shut the fuck up. No one's talking to you.
I'm talking.
Back to your side. Fucking asshole.
Yeah. So fucking disgusting. Go home then.
Play some tennis.
Shut the fuck up. Go play tennis by yourself.
John, congratulations on your victory today. What do you have to say about your behaviour?
Can we talk about my tennis?
Are you worried about the reputation you've gained over here? People are talking more about your behaviour than your tennis.
Well, you certainly are talking more about my behaviour than my tennis.
But do you think it's valid?
No.
But do you have any regrets about your behaviour?
I mean, I regret I got to sit here and talk to you. That's all I regret.
Do you expect anyone to root for you in the final against Borg?
Look, I get that you got your hero, you know, your gentleman, Borg, and you need a villain.
Do you think you'll be able to keep your temper?
Let's talk about tennis. Does anybody have any tennis
John,
questions?
Do you enjoy being a villain? Do you feel it actually helps you?
Do you think you'll be able to keep your temper?
Why don't you shut the fuck up, man? Are you watching the matches?
Yes, I'm watching the matches.
You don't understand what the fuck it takes to play tennis. You know I go out there and I give everything for this game? Everything. Everything in me gets left out on that fucking court. And none of you understand it because none of you do it.
John leans back from the microphone at his press conference, then he's striding along a corridor. Bjorn's in the shower, leaning his head on his hand as he exhales heavily. In flashback, a voice.
Hi, Borg.
Bjorn's on a plane, asleep in his seat. A voice says, Mr. Borg, we've arrived. Turning his head, Bjorn opens his eyes and asks, where are we?
Where are we?
So Detalia, Stockholm, 1979. Bjorn, in a fur coat, steps out of a limousine.
How's the flight? You look great. This is the crew from Argentina.
Mucho gusto. Silvana Ruiz.
Pleased to meet you. I'm Silvana Ruiz from Argentinian television. The reporter turns to an interpreter. The interpreter tells Bjorn, we'll begin by saying you're the world's best tennis player, that you've won Wimbledon four times, and you're chasing a fifth title. Could you please play against the garage door like you did as a boy? Taking a racket and ball, Bjorn walks over to the spot where he used to play, facing the line of garage doors as the film crew look on. Then he stops and stands, rooted to the spot. He turns to the crew.
I can't remember which door.
Well, can't you just pick one? I mean, they all look alike.
No, it has to be the right one. Wait, please, wait with the camera.
Bjorn, I really don't think it's all that important.
It's very important.
He walks away. As the reporter calls, please, Mr. Borg, he gets back into the limo. Bjorn's eyes, close up, then the old footage of himself as a youngster hitting a tennis ball against one of the garage doors. His dad pretends to interview him afterwards. You won Wimbledon twice this afternoon. How does it feel? The young Bjorn answers simply, it feels good. From the young Bjorn in his blue tracksuit outside the apartment blocks to Bjorn at Wimbledon in 1980 sitting in his hotel room. Then he's in a locker room, his hair damp and straggly. He looks up as the door opens. Leonard walks into the locker room, closes the door behind him and looks at Bjorn, who's sitting bare-chested on a bench. Staring at his own clasped hands, Bjorn says, go away, Labo. His brow furrowed with concern, Leonard walks over to the bench, picks up the discarded towel from the seat and sits down beside Bjorn. Without looking at Leonard, Bjorn leans his forehead on his hand and rubs his eyes.
Anders.
Breathe, says Leonard. Bjorn takes a deep breath, covering his mouth with his fist, his head still bent. Watching him intently, Leonard puts a fatherly arm around his shoulder. Let's finish this together, says Leonard. Without looking up, Bjorn nods. Leonard nods too, then leans in and pulls his player closer into a side hug. Later, they're walking together through a dimly lit corridor in the All England Club. Bjorn, now in a red and white tracksuit top, stops for a moment and presses his hand to his forehead. Turning away from Leonard, he stares down at the floor. Stop feeling sorry for yourself, says Leonard. You're acting like... As two female members of staff turn the corner into the corridor, he waits until they pass by. You're acting like a baby, treating people who care about you like dirt, says Leonard. So go out there and hang your head and you'll lose. Is that what you want? To end all this? Then just give him a walkover. Tell them you pulled a muscle or claim that your nerves... Stop it, says Bjorn. I know what you're doing, Bjorn tells him. You don't have to. Everything I've ever done has led up to this moment. The two men stand in the corridor, facing each other. A half smile begins to play around Leonard's mouth. One match left, he says. One point at a time, agrees Bjorn with a smile. Leonard puts his arm around Bjorn and draws him in for a bear hug. Bjorn rests his head on his coach's shoulder. Then they walk off together along the passage, Leonard's arm around Bjorn's shoulder. John is in his hotel room, looking up at the board on his wall where he's written the names of the players who've progressed through to each round of the tournament. In the centre of the board, he writes the names Borg and John, outlining them in capital letters with his black marker pen. John sits and gazes up at his handiwork, smiling slightly, his expression excited, yet tense. An aerial view of Wimbledon Centre Court, surrounded by rows of stands filled with spectators. The umpires and line judges are in their places around the court. Bjorn's wearing his headband, staring down at the floor, his expression one of rapt concentration. Sitting on the same bench beside him, tapping one foot repeatedly, is John. He's dressed in white shorts and his red, white and blue tennis jacket with a red headband.
5 minutes, gentlemen.
On the wall above them is the slogan, "If you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same." A man in a suit and tie approaches a sound engineer.
Turn down the volume on McEnroe, Mike.
What? They switch sides all the time.
That's an order from the top.
It's the perfect rivalry. The baseline player and the net rusher.
Cold Nordic blood, brash New Yorker.
Frick. Iceborg versus Super Brett.
15,000 spectators, hundreds of millions at home by their TVs.
The entire world's waiting for these two giants to enter like gladiators.
Gentlemen.
John gets to his feet and walks off behind the official, followed by Bjorn. In the players' box, Leonard pats Mariana's shoulder reassuringly.
First out is McEnroe. The crowd is booing. That's a first in Wimbledon final.
A Swedish commentator says, "Here's Bjorn. The people of Sweden are rooting for you." Spectators rise and cheer.
There he is, Bjorn Borg, the Emperor. This court belongs to him.
The two finalists walk out onto the court, accompanied by the official and followed by members of the press.
The final we've all been waiting for. Borg, a legend in his own lifetime. Tremendous pressure on him today. He's won it 4 times. For the 5th time, I'm sure will be even harder.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please. McEnroe serves. Ready? Play.
John serves and Bjorn returns with a backhand. John hits the ball down the line for a winner.
15 love. And there is the talent of McEnroe in the opening point.
John bounces the ball, serves again, moves to the net and wins another point to lead 30 love in the opening game. A commentator says, reaching the net at lightning speed, McEnroe.
It's not back on the net, McEnroe.
Leonard looks tense.
40, love.
And there's Borg's blistering return of serve.
40, 15. Game to McEnroe.
First game of the match goes to McEnroe.
McEnroe's serve and volley decides the first game.
John's father's sitting in the player's box wearing a white flowerpot hat. On his chair, Bjorn wipes his face with a towel while John gulps down a drink. The players return to the court. Bjorn serves. They rally. Then Bjorn's return goes wide.
Out! McEnroe
takes the game!
What a fantastic start from McEnroe!
McEnroe to serve.
John serves and Bjorn returns it. John sends Bjorn to one side, then smashes his return. Bjorn gets to the ball but sends it into the net.
Game, McEnroe.
Yes!
Borg really having difficulty with McEnroe's left-handed serve.
Like trying to catch hummingbirds.
Borg looks shell-shocked.
McEnroe is humiliating Borg, and he's making him look slow.
What if
Borg's been steamrolled by McEnroe, sad to say, but I think we're going to have a new king on the throne.
True shifter. McEnroe, set one.
Bjorn sways from side to side as he waits for John's serve.
Game and first set to McEnroe, 6-1.
Bjorn Borg is in trouble! Trouble in Sweden!
At the changeover, Bjorn takes a drink, looking determined. The scoreboard lights show one set to John, who's turning his racket handle back and forth as he grips it in both hands.
New balls, please. Time.
John walks to the back of the court.
Second set, ball to serve.
Leonard murmurs, "Come on, Bjorn, one point at a time." Mariana's lit a cigarette. Bjorn bounces the ball, looks across the net, then serves an ace.
Oh, unbelievable!
John walks across the baseline, looking doleful. Play goes on, then Bjorn hits a winner just inside the line. Oh my, says the Swedish commentator. Mariana turns and smiles briefly at Leonard. Play resumes. Bjorn comes to the net and volleys back to John, whose return lands outside the line.
Game to Borg.
We're seeing a completely different Borg in the second set.
The scoreboard shows Bjorn leading 3-2. John lobs, Bjorn smashes him, John reaches the ball, and Bjorn smashes him again to win the point.
Oh, there it is! Bjorn Borg takes himself to set point!
John walks to the baseline, hands on hips. He bounces the ball, then looks up to serve, staring straight at Bjorn, grim-faced. He serves. Bjorn hits a double-handed backhand. John lunges for the ball and sends it into the net.
Fuck!
Game and second set to Borg. 7-5.
The scoreboard shows it's one set all. At the changeover, John throws his racket down as he reaches his chair. Third set, Bjorn smashes a winner. Play resumes. They rally. Then John stumbles slightly as he runs for the ball.
And McEnroe seems out of touch.
Bjorn leads 4-1 in the third set.
It's a big momentum raiser when you come from behind like Borg has done, and it tends to undermine your opponent's confidence.
Bjorn wins a point at the net.
48-15.
So that's Borg. Two set points.
John's return goes wide.
Game and third set to Borg.
And there it is. Bjorn Borg wins the third set, and he leads 2-1.
At the changeover, John stomps back to his chair, flings his racket to the ground, sits down and spits on the grass, tapping his feet edgily. In contrast, Bjorn looks impassive, wiping his hands and racket grip with a towel while behind him in the stands, rows of spectators are on their feet applauding. Sitting beside Leonard, Mariana presses a hand to her mouth as she watches. In his chair, John takes another drink. The scoreboard shows the scores from the three sets played 6-1, 7-5, 6-3. A commentator.
So, it's going to be a fourth set now. If Borg wins it, He can call himself 5-time Wimbledon champion.
Fourth set, Bjorn hits a return which bounces off the net to skid past John's feet. John serves again and runs to the net.
Oh! Balls called. I thought it was good. McEnroe thought it was good.
40.
Second double fault.
John's shot goes long. It's out, says the Swedish commentator. It's just a matter of time before McEnroe throws one of his notorious tantrums.
Out.
John's father looks anxious. As play goes on, John lobs Bjorn, who turns his back to chase the ball, and hits a return lob with his back to his opponent. John smashes the lob, but Bjorn returns it down the line. John hits a shot that lands squarely on the baseline, sending up chalk dust.
Out.
I believe the umpire is wrong about that call. How will McEnroe react to this?
30-15.
John glares, but plays on. At the changeover, John tears lining from one of his shoes, gulps a drink and towels down his arms, while Bjorn sits calmly sipping from a cup.
Time.
It's all right. It's a great match. Just play your tennis.
John walks to the baseline, throws the ball up and serves an ace.
Ace McEnroe!
First Bjorn, then John running.
McEnroe is getting stronger. This set goes on.
McEnroe has the game, a 3-2 lead in the fourth set.
Bjorn hits a return.
Just out.
Come on, John.
The pressure is now all on the Swede.
From overhead, John moves backwards to hit a winner. Man, McEnroe's fast.
McEnroe. Good ball.
John's forehand finds the net.
Oh, no!
Bjorn smashes a winner.
One return! And Bjorn Borg is in the lead!
Leonard applauds, then Bjorn serves.
And ace for Borg! He can almost taste the championship now!
40-15 and Bjorn has a match point. Two match points in a Grand Slam final. Bjorn's never messed that up. Bjorn stares across the court at John, who's swaying from side to side as he waits to receive the service. Mariana holds a cigarette between restless fingers. Then Bjorn throws the ball up and raises his arm to serve.
No, fault called.
It's out.
Quiet, please. Second serve.
One point at a time, says Leonard. Bjorn serves again, and a rally goes on.
McEnroe lives! He saves the first match point!
Second championship point for Borg. Come here, Bjorn.
Come on, Bjorn, says the Swedish commentator. Coming forward to the net, John hits a drop shot. Bjorn gets his racket to the ball, but puts it into the net. So close, two match points lost. Back to deuce.
Borg's got to try not to think about those lost match points now.
John's cross-court forehand wins the point.
Oh! Great point for John McEnroe. Quiet, please. Quiet, please.
So what a moment this is for Borg. He stands to serve, having lost two match points. McEnroe is back in the match. Now with a chance to make it even.
John's passing shot lands in. In the stand, his father pumps his fists.
John McEnroe has snatched it away from Borg, just like that! 6 games all, tiebreak, now comes into operation.
No men's final has ever ended in a tiebreak.
And for viewers who are not familiar with tennis, the tiebreak is a final game that determines the outcome of the set. The first player to reach 7 points wins, but you need a 2-point lead. Bjorn's leading 6-5 in the tiebreak.
Bjorn Borg has taken himself to another championship point.
Good match, Bjorn.
Match point Borg, says a French commentator. Bjorn serves, they rally, then Bjorn lunges for the ball but misses it. Now the tiebreak scores 6-6.
Opportunity, and it's through like a rapier. Championship point number 4.
Oh, John McEnroe! He has ripped 4 match points from Bjorn Borg.
Now it's 7-all in the tiebreak. Boy, that American's playing well.
He has 7 points.
Now McEnroe has the chance to turn this whole thing upside down.
Come on, Bjorn, whispers Leonard. John wipes his brow, serves, then runs to the net, chasing Bjorn's return, but falls over and sprawls face down on the grass. Bjorn did it. What a knockout, says the commentator. The score's 8-all.
Can either man take any more punishment? If this were a heavyweight boxing match, they'd stop the fight.
6th match point for Bjorn, says the Swedish commentator. 7th match point. Bjorn leads 12-11.
If Borg wins this point, the roof will blow off the centre court.
John's turn to serve. Bjorn hits the ball down the line, then John sends it to the other side to win the point.
Borg has been so close, but McEnroe just won't give in.
Both men have looked down the barrel of a gun, and they're both still alive.
I don't think I've ever seen a tiebreak like this.
The umpire, seated in his high chair courtside, looks back and forth. John prepares to serve.
Set point for McEnroe.
His return lands just out.
He's got it! Oh, no! The linesman is out!
John puts his face in his hands, but Bjorn looks stoic as the two change ends. It's 15-all in the tiebreak. They each walk to their baseline. Bjorn serves, and after a brief rally, John hits the ball straight down the line to win the point.
Yeah!
Set point for McEnroe.
This is exciting, but the tension is almost like torture, says the Swedish commentator. I can't bear to watch this, Mariana tells Leonard. John waits for the serve, his face strained with tension. Play starts, and when Bjorn nets a return, John's father jumps to his feet.
Yes! It's dead even!
Come on!
Incredible! McEnroe wins the tiebreak 18-16. Bjorn Borg has lost 7 match points.
Bjorn stands still for a moment, breathing deeply, then heads towards his seat for the changeover. As he walks, he glances up at the rows of spectators, many of them standing, applauding, waving their arms. As he nears the umpire's chair, he turns and looks around the court. From her seat, Mariana's eyes are fixed on him, her expression fraught with concern. Now sitting in his chair, Bjorn has a drink and towels his face.
And what must Borg be thinking? That elusive 5th championship almost within his reach, but stolen away from him 7 times.
The scoreboard updates to show John won the 4th set 7-6. 2 sets all, says the Swedish commentator. McEnroe's not only back in the game, he's got the upper hand. In Bjorn's memory, the sunlight filtering through the tall trees, the day he ran from the tennis club into the woods, he sees himself as a teenager pummeling the tree, knocking chips of bark off its trunk. When he gets up to walk back onto the court, a section of the spectators rise to their feet in appreciation. Standing behind the baseline, Bjorn bounces the ball a few times. From overhead, Bjorn throwing the ball high in the air, then sending a powerful serve across the net. It's an ace. My oh my, says the Swedish commentator. John shakes his head as he walks to the back of the court. His father's looking apprehensive. Mariana and Leonard's heads turn back and forth, following the action as Bjorn serves for the first game of the fourth set. John hits a backhand cross-court volley, but Bjorn reaches it and returns it straight past him to win the game. What is going on?
It is some heaven.
This is nothing short of unbelievable. No one can recover after losing 7 match points in a Wimbledon final. But Borg, he's playing like nothing happened.
Bjorn slides across the grass to play a shot, then a ball boy picks up a ball from the net and runs to the sidelines. 2 games all.
And now it's all about heart. Hearts beating on either side of the net. They can hit the ball. It's up to the hearts.
In slow motion, Bjorn serving, then John smashing a shot. Bjorn's determined face, then in flashback, the film of his younger self playing against the garage doors outside the apartment block. Now it's 4 games all. John's face glistening with sweat, his eyes fixed on the ball. In flashback, young John putting on his headband in front of the mirror, then practicing on the clay court. It's 5 games all in the deciding set. John's face is taut with tension. Then he's seated in his chair at the changeover, his head bent, twisting his interwoven fingers, while Bjorn walks past him. From Bjorn on court, to the memory of 15-year-old Bjorn in his Davis Cup jacket, resting his head against the bathroom mirror. John stumbling as he moves on court, then in flashback, the young John struggling to find an answer to the multiplication question. It's 6 games all. Young Bjorn in the car, sitting beside Leonard as they drive along the long road in the dark. Now Bjorn's leading 7-6. Bjorn holds up a tennis racket and plucks its interlocking strings. On court, John stands with his hands on his hips.
So once again, match point, Borg.
Mariana's watching through her fingers. I'm lighting a cigar now, a victory cigar, I hope, says the Swedish commentator. On court, Bjorn sways back and forth as he waits for the serve. In the commentary box, the Swedish commentator puffs out a cloud of white smoke. John's expression's anguished as he serves. At the net, John volleys, but Bjorn's backhand goes past him. He's done it again. Bjorn's on his knees on the grass court as Mariana and Leonard hug. Bjorn walks to the net to shake John's hand. This is the greatest achievement in the history of Swedish sports. Bjorn reaches up to shake the umpire's hand. Then as photographers swarm around him, he says, "Unbelievable." Sitting in his chair courtside, he smiles for the photographers. Then a stream of people come to congratulate him one by one, shaking his hand and patting him on the back. In the commentary box, the Swedish commentator enthuses to his colleagues. From his chair courtside, John looks up at his father, who lowers his gaze. John in turn looks down, his lips start to tremble, and he throws his green towel over his head to hide his face. Bjorn, wearing his red tennis jacket, goes back on the court to receive the large, silver gilt cup from the Duke and Duchess of Kent, who shake his hand while the crowd applauds. John's in his chair, all but ignored, while Bjorn raises the trophy to show it to the fans, among them a smiling Mariana and Leonard.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the runner-up of Wimbledon 1980, John Patrick McEnroe.
The spectators rise and applaud as John walks up to receive the runners-up plate.
There he comes, a standing ovation for McEnroe. His behaviour today was beyond reproach.
John Patrick McEnroe is not the champion today, but he has finally won the hearts of Great Britain.
and Borg, king of the tennis world, without a doubt.
At the Champions Ball.
Well played.
Thank you.
A cake bearing an image of Bjorn's face is cut into slices. He signs autographs for well-wishers and a woman kisses his cheek. On stage, a singer in a sparkly gown is performing.
And all you see is glory.
Seated at a round table, Bjorn stares into space, seemingly lost in a reverie. He lowers his gaze.
They break their collarbones and come up swinging.
Looking up, Bjorn locks eyes with Leonard, who's sitting two places away from him, looking smart in a black bow tie. They smile at each other.
Never found, but most have seen it all.
Leonard's expression's pensive.
They live their lives.
Mariana, sitting on the other side of Bjorn, gazes at him, but he seems lost in his own thoughts. People come over to Bjorn's table to congratulate him. Slices of the cake are served and photographers take his picture.
Some make it when they're young.
Through the crowd, Bjorn spots Mariana leaving the room. He quickly gets up to go after her. He walks down a passage, passing catering staff, then pushes open two sets of doors to reach an outdoor terrace. Mariana's standing there alone in her sequined evening dress, holding a cigarette. They face each other for a moment, then Mariana asks him, "Shouldn't you be in there?" Looking around the empty terrace, Bjorn shakes his head and asks her, "Can we just leave?" Looking him in the eyes, Mariana asks, "Can we?" Bjorn replies, "Isn't that up to us?" She smiles warmly at him, and he responds with a smile of his own. Mariana takes a puff of her cigarette, then starts walking away with an inviting smile. Bjorn follows her, holding her outstretched hand. Then they move closer together and walk off across the terrace with their arms around each other. Daytime, and Bjorn and Mariana are walking through an airport lounge. They come to a stop beside the windows overlooking the runways. Across the hall, Bjorn spots John wearing a pair of headphones over his ears. Looking up, John sees the couple and promptly pulls the headphones off his ears. Bjorn, wearing a leather jacket and jeans, makes his way over to John, and John, stashing the headphones in the pocket of his tennis jacket, walks to meet his rival. They shake hands.
Really, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good match.
Yeah. Thought you had me.
Almost, yeah. Maybe next year.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. You hug people or so? Come on.
They hug.
All right, man.
Safe trip.
John goes to leave, then turns back to shake Bjorn's hand again, smiling. From across the hall, Mariana watches as John talks animatedly and Bjorn smiles back, nodding and gesturing in reply. John shakes Bjorn's hand once more, smiling warmly, then turns and walks away. Bjorn watches John head over to join his father, who's standing near his luggage. Then he goes back to Mariana, putting his arm around her shoulder. They watch John and his father walk off together. A year later, John became world number one. He defeated Bjorn in the Wimbledon final. Bjorn and Mariana in bed in their home in Monaco. The same year, Bjorn decided to retire from tennis. Bjorn stands alone on his balcony at twilight, a lone figure in shadow against the sea and glowing sky. He was only 26. Later in life, Bjorn and John became close friends. When John married, Bjorn was best man. former rivals, best enemies. A black and white photo of John seated at a table, with Bjorn standing beside him.